This program deals with themes of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
We must guard against the military-industrial complex.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The power they took from the people will return to the people.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Shall I tell you what I find beautiful about you? You are at your very best when things are worse.
Sooner or later, though, you always have to wake up.
Be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas at veritasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home. I want to wish everyone in the United States a happy Independence Day. And to you, Veritas member, thank you for making our truth journey a reality. Please subscribe at veritasradio.com to listen to all segments of tonight's interview and all of our material. And have you considered becoming a Veritas sponsor? This is a great way to help Veritas advertise your product or service, and for the listeners to also know that it is our members and sponsors who make it all possible that we release one segment of every show for free. So please visit our website and support our sponsors. And in addition to MMS, our USB drives with all our seasons and bonus material, we have added 100% organic phytovitamins. If you're taking the big brand multivitamins, you are taking a chemical cocktail. Click on the phytovitamins link on our website and really feel the difference. And one last important piece of information. Coming soon, Sanitas Radio. No, not Veritas Radio. Veritas means truth. Sanitas means health. Health declassified. Because your health and longevity should not be classified information. That is all I will say for now. And to get in touch with us for member support, media inquiries, you want to be a guest or are a whistleblower, there's a link for you by clicking on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. The riddle of Atlantis has never been solved thus far to the satisfaction of most people, the academic experts in particular. Hundreds of possible locations have already been proposed as the site of Atlantis. Some authorities think that Atlantis is located on an island such as Crete, the Azores, Ireland or Espartel, or even the Canary Islands or the Antilles, the Florida Keys, etc. Is Atlantis just a myth? A moral fable, a science fiction creation? Or is it indeed an actual history, somehow restored to the realm of reality by the magic pen of the Prince of Philosophers? There's a certain something in the story of Atlantis that captures human imagination and instantly fascinates everyone who reads Plato's masterful account of the lost prehistoric empire of global extent. And to discuss this and the possible correct location of Atlantis, tonight's special guest is Frank Joseph Hoff, on behalf of the late Professor Aricio Nunez dos Santos, PhD. Right now, on Veritas.
This is Zechariah Sitchin, and you are listening to a wonderful radio interview conducted by Mel.
From a very young age, Frank Joseph Hoff became very interested in the sciences, ancient mysteries, lost civilizations, and the unknown. In 1996, Mr. Hoff met up with Richard C. Hoagland at a Mars conference in Seattle and started doing some pro bono research for him on his off hours. It is while doing research for Mr. Hoagland that he came across the unusual work of a Brazilian professor by the name of Aricio Nunes dos Santos, PhD, on his Atlantis website. Professor Santos wrote a book titled Atlantis, The Lost Continent Finally Found, The Definitive Localization of Plato's Lost Civilization. Unfortunately, Professor Dos Santos passed away on September the 9th, 2005. And to learn more about the book, visit www.atlan.org. That's ATLAN.org. It's linked up at VeritasRadio.com. And directly from Seattle, Washington, I would like to welcome Professor Santos's publisher and longtime friend, Frank Joseph Hoff. Hello, Mr. Hoff, and welcome to Veritas. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Mel, and good day to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you. And we're here at the desert, probably about 110 degrees. I hope it is not as hot where you are up in beautiful Seattle.
Well, no, not today. It's actually overcast and down in the 60s here. So it's we haven't really had our summer come in yet. At least it kind of comes a little bit and sometimes goes, but it hasn't stabilized yet here.
Great. And may I call you Frank, by the way?
That'd be fine.
Great. Frank, first of all, I read the book. Somebody brought it to my attention a few weeks ago. And it is such a different version of what most people talk about. And I have to ask you, for how did you become involved in this research with Atlantis, and how did you connect with the late Professor Dos Santos?
Well, as you mentioned in your overview of our project here and my background and so on, I met up with Richard Hoagland at a Mars conference in Seattle. And I did some pro bono research for him. But while I was doing that pro bono research, I came across the website of Professor Santos just, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks or something after he put it up. It wasn't very long. And I started reading through it. And I found that what I was reading was very different than what I've ever really read on Atlantis before. It was very unusual. It was also very logical. It was well thought out and tended to be very scientific and detailed. So I got to looking closer and I said, who is putting this out? And I started checking into his curriculum vitae or his resume. That's actually located on our website as well at www.atlan.org. And I thought, wow, this man has a tremendous background. And I see that he's a professor down at a major university down in Brazil called the Federal University of Minas Gerais in the city of Belo Horizonte in the state of Minas Gerais. And it's actually one of the top universities in Brazil. And I see that he's a tenured professor in nuclear physics and nuclear engineering, and he was also a climatologist, a geologist, and a physical chemist. I mean, he was doing all these different types of disciplines, and he took these on, at least some of them, in order to start doing some work with regards to Atlantis. And how he did that is he originally went out to really debunk the whole notion of Atlantis because he saw so many researchers that did not have the appropriate background or disciplines and things in order to do the work properly. And so he started to really go out to start to write some articles, really, you know, showing that really Atlantis didn't exist and there was nothing really to it and to debunk it and all this sort of thing. And after about 10 years of research, he found out that it did exist, and it was actually more advanced than he could even imagine himself. But in order to do all the work properly, I just mentioned a few things that he took on and that he was involved in. But he also went into took on the disciplines of archaeology, mythology, linguistics. He spoke 14 languages, ethnology, occultism. He didn't really want to take occultism on per se, just for doing it, but it was really just to find the hidden meanings and symbols behind things so he could really decode the whole, riddle or problem of Atlantis. And then he also took things on like etymology and so on. So you get to learn the derivations and meanings of words, that sort of thing. And he also, during this research, I should mention, we'll talk about this more, but he also figured out the language, the actual language that the Atlanteans spoke as well. So there's all these types of different disciplines. Alchemy was another one that he had to really put the puzzle together, because he was describing to me, it's not just like a 1 or 2,000 piece puzzle, but it's something like a billion piece puzzle that got scattered all around the world. And he had to fit all the pieces in real nice and correctly, not jam them. And so he can get a clear picture about Atlantis, is where it was, where it is today, what the civilization was all about, how they lived, and just a whole host of other things regarding this long lost civilization, Mel.
Why is it, Frank, and I bet you get this question all the time, that we all seem to conclude that Atlantis would have to be somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean? Why is that notion incorrect, in your opinion?
Well, it got changed around, or the idea got embedded into everybody's minds because the names of the oceans got changed through time. A lot of times, names will get changed even over like 500 or 1,000 years. And in this case, it goes back 11,600 plus years, maybe 12,000 years ago. And so this is what added to all the confusion. And what I'm referring to is the oceans of the world, the Atlantic Ocean, as it's called today, the Indian Ocean, as it's called today, and the Pacific Ocean, as it's called today. And what the reason that we haven't found Atlantis all this time is because we've been looking for a needle in a haystack, which is really hard to find. But we've been looking for the needle also in the wrong haystack or haystacks all this time. And so what happens is you will really just, it's virtually impossible to find it. And so what we found out, and this is really to answer your question, is that the name of the Pacific Ocean got changed and the name of the Indian Ocean got changed. And this added a lot of the confusion to things. And what I mean by that is supposedly Vasco Balboa is the person that discovered the Pacific Ocean. But what happened is, and where the confusion came in, is another explorer by the name of
Magellan.
Ferdinand Magellan. He ended up seeing the Pacific Ocean through the Straits of Magellan, through Argentina and Chile way. And he saw it as a very passive and calm ocean, at least compared to, let's say, the Atlantic Ocean. And so he named it for the infinitive verb of Portuguese or Spanish called pacificar. Now, when you use it in a sentence, it's either pacifico or pacifica. And what happened is we drop the A or the O and call it Pacific. That's what it's called today. And the name stuck. And so that had a lot of confusion to everything. And then a while back, the Indian Ocean also got changed too. And they also used to call it the Erythian Sea. But in both cases, the oceans, the Pacific and the Indian Ocean, were called the oceans of the Atlanteans, or the Atlantis Ocean. And the thing about the oceans of the world even today is that they're coterminous. That's the scientific name for it, in that you can navigate from one ocean to the next, or you can circumnavigate the globe and go from, let's say, the Pacific Ocean to the over to the Atlantic Ocean, or over to the Indian Ocean, and then back around to the Pacific again. So this is the oceans at the one time were really just the Atlantis Ocean. And what really added to confusion is that we have the name Atlantic Ocean today, and instead of me calling something else and maybe the Pacific or the Indian Ocean called the Atlantis Ocean, everybody thinks that because if it's Atlantis, it has to be in the Atlantis or Atlantic Ocean. But it's not the Atlantic Ocean it's called today. It was the Atlantic Ocean that was called 11,600 plus years ago. That's the ocean that it was. So these names get changed, and that which add the confusion to everything, Mel.
I understand. And right from the beginning, I just want to play devil's advocate. Of course, I'm not trying to debunk at all. I really enjoyed the book, and I'm intrigued. But Professor Santos had some strong words for Eric Von Daniken and the late Zachariah Sitchin. He said, quote, "Their theories are sheer science fiction with no support whatsoever in reality or in science, let alone in tradition." And the title of the book, Atlantis, the Lost Continent Finally Found, and the subtitle, The Definitive Localization of Plato's Lost Civilization. With such a definitive title, where is the tangible proof?
Okay, that's a good question. There's a lot of proof that's it's coming up, and more of it all the time. Where we heard or learned of the story originally was through Plato or Plato.
Right.
And if it wasn't for his dialogues, the Critias and Timaeus dialogues, we wouldn't probably know anything about Atlantis today. But it wasn't just him that had the information. He really learned of it from Solon, the great lawmakers of Athens at the time, who was telling the story of a vacation he took to Egypt and speaking to the some Egyptian priests, and this is what Plato ended up overhearing. And so he made a record of this until somehow he was interrupted. But in any case, we also found out, and I'll get back to your question here, is that Solon also not only learned it from an Egyptian priest, we found out the Egyptian priests learned of it from the Hindus. And the Hindus, we found out, could be traced back further to the acts of the Atlanteans. So it ended up going back that way, all the ways to the Atlanteans themselves. There's a lot of different things that the reason why it's at the location it is now. But a lot of this is explained in the Critias and Timaeus dialogues. First of all, the size of the continent of Atlantis, as explained by Plato or even Solon or so on, was the size of Asia Minor, which are like Western Turkey, and Libya, which is now changed to, it was considered all of like Northern Africa rather than just the geographical area that it comprises today. And that combined, and that area is the size of the continent of Atlantis is one thing. That's what you have to be looking for. You also got to be able to look for a continent, as extrapolated from these dialogues as well, that could support a population of over 20 million people in the height of the Pleistocene Ice Age, the most recent ice age. So, you know, right now it's very hard, let's say, for instance, support a population of, let's say, 1,000 people down in Antarctica, because in situ there's been ice core samples taken down there that are well over a million years old, or as much as 2 million years old. So it's very hard to have a population or a civilization for them to rise or to take care of a civilization of over 20 million people in a not so good area.
Unless you have agriculture.
Unless you have agriculture. And that is one of the things that they invented. Which is probably the biggest invention, really, almost of all time, because what it does is it allows you not to be a hunter-gatherer and be able to fixate to the land, so you can develop things like, culture, the sciences, the religions, the farming itself. I mean, the agriculture itself, animal domestication is another big one. All the different types of things like philosophy and so on, and just be able to raise families and education and everything that goes with it. And so this really is where civilization began, is in Atlantis, or even Lemurian Atlantis. And so that was a major invention and scientific breakthrough. And it may seem simple today in many ways, but that type of an invention is rather phenomenal.
And there were so many aha moments for me when you say Lemurian Atlantis. I want to explore that, but let's just go back to Plato for a second. So Plato learned this from Solon, and Solon learned it from the Egyptian priest. The Egyptian priest learned it from the Hindus in India and Indonesia. Could there have been some grapevine effect here, since this was all communicated via oral tradition, Frank?
Well, a lot of this information was dispersed through a lot of different types of ancient texts all around the world. And I want to also preface the show, too, as I think about it, that Professor Santos and myself, we're not in this to put one religion against the other, or one sect of one religion against the other, one political group or one social group or anything like that. We don't really have hardly even an economic agenda. So most of the time we've been just losing money on the project.
Sure.
The only thing we're looking for here is to really get the truth out, mainly from a scientific standpoint. As Professor Santos explained to me many times in the past when he was alive, is that this is his gift to the world. He did 30 years of research on doing this, so it was the first 10 was actually just figuring out if there was anything to it at all. And then after 10 years, he did figure it out, and another 10 supportive, and then almost another 10 along with myself, to really get about 30 years in to really fill in all the pieces of the puzzle and where you get a clear picture of where, like I said, a civilization really began. I mean, the true location, not a remnant or a colony or an outpost, but the actual location, although it was a worldwide empire. And so it was, and this is also going back to your question too, there was many things that tells us that the location where it is, and maybe I should elaborate more where it is before I get into all this, because in the Critias and Timaeus dialogues, he mentions things like having pineapples and coconuts, and maybe like bananas, and also that Atlantis was famous for giant elephants. And I sent you off a couple of pictures in regards to the giant elephants that were in Atlantis that were bigger than a African elephant as it's today, or let's say an Indian elephant, but more like the size of a woolly mammoth or a mastodon. And I think you have those pictures up on your website now.
I do. I do. Sure.
And I took that picture in the Bandung Museum where in Indonesia, and that's where we're leading into this, is that Professor Santos found out that the lost continent of Atlantis is in Southeast Asia, mainly in and around and centered around the country of Indonesia and the surrounding area, which can comprise, let's say, Malaysia, maybe as far over as like the Philippines, Singapore, and the island, let's say, of Borneo as well, and goes out all the ways out to eastways, let's say, to Bali and Lombok. So it comprises a vast area, and today about 2/3 of the, as is depicted on our book, is underneath this. The sea of the continent. So you'll see that in the book. It's in yellow, and that's still underneath the ocean today. And we've got that verified by several different sources, including the NOAA Space spy satellite photo in infrared that was not available when Professor Stansel started this project, even though he drew out a map on our website, if people take a look, that really fits like a glove. And we acquired this later by the Freedom of Information Act, and it pretty much confirms what he's been working on all this time. But as far as the elephant, it's over in the Bandung Geology Museum, and what they did is they found about a 90% complete one of these giant elephants, although it's just not one or two times that they find it. This was just more complete that they found it in a Java riverbed over in East Java area. But they found these things like a couple of thousand times. So it's not just like an accident or a mistake. And I think this may be the one of the only areas in the world where these may be found. But that they were Atlantis was famous for these giant elephants that are used in wars and battles. And so they were kind of prized at the time for having these and very famous for having them.
You know, according to some estimates, there are about, 18,307 Indonesian islands and about 7,107 Philippine islands, with thousands of them uninhabited. Do you think these islands were mountain peaks at one point of the entire continent of Atlantis?
Yeah, a couple of things on that. There may be different estimates on that, but as far as Indonesia goes, it's generally over 17,500 islands just for Indonesia alone.
Right.
And then, of course, as you mentioned, the Philippines have a number of islands too, and so on in around that area. So, yeah, I mean, what's happened is that this is a very shallow place in the world. Also, as mentioned before, you have to have a place in the world at the time where you can support a population of 20 million people. This area of the Indonesian archipelago is right on the, at least for Sumatra part, is right on the equator. And so it made it a very temperate climate. Now, it actually had several other things going for it too. One thing is, for agriculture, it also had volcanically rich soil. And Atlantis is also famous for growing or harvesting as many as three crops per year. Most of the time they had like one or two, let's say two, for instance, but sometimes as much as three. And the reason is because they had the right type of precipitation, they had the right weather in the middle of the Pleistocene Ice Age, and they had the volcanically rich soil. Now, the other part with the volcanically rich soils is it comes from volcanoes. Currently, in Indonesia, there's 129 active volcanoes, 129. Up in my state of Washington, we have a couple of ones. One not too long back was, of course, Mount St. Helens that went off. But these are small volcanoes, very small. But ones that are much bigger, let's say, are the ones, let's say, in Yellowstone, where it's a caldera. Just like the same ones in Indonesia, for instance, the Toba volcano, which is up in northern Sumatra, is a caldera supervolcano. Now, at about 74 or so thousand years ago, the Toba volcano went off. And this was caused a big catastrophic event to Lemurian Atlantis. And ended up devastating Lemurian Atlantis. And so what happened is they ended up having to rebuild over a period of about 60,000 years to the advanced civilization Atlantis proper. They ended up rebuilding in part by going into India. They went into India and got chased out in some cases by the locals. At least the inhabitants that were left after the Toba volcano. And they rebuilt after 60,000 years. Eventually, they went into the Indus Valley area, too, between Pakistan, which is now Pakistan, and India. Although at the time, I think the geographical border was more India. But those things changed over time. They ended up building the Atlantis proper, or the Wondrous Sun, to be the advanced civilization. Again, just think how far we've come, Mel, in this 1,000 years,
right?
Let alone 60,000.
Even 100 years.
Yes. So, but I just thought I'd put in perspective, let's say 1,000 versus 60,000, how much, you know, advancement there is. I mean, this, it's tremendous. So at approximately 11,600 years ago, unfortunately, the Krakatoa volcano went off. And I don't mean the one in 1883. I mean the one that was 11,600 plus years ago. And that ended up, first of all, cutting the whole island of Java in half. In other words, it wasn't really Sumatra and Java. It was just Java, which was known as Upper Java and Lower Java. And it ended up cutting it in half. And that's why you have the Sunda Strait today, where the Krakatoa volcano was. But several things with this, and this is going to answer your question as well with regards to the mountaintops, is that it wasn't that Atlantis sunk. It was that sea levels rose. And people at the time not only got burnt, but they also got drowned. Now, we saw a lot of this play out more recently with the Aceh earthquake that happened up in northern Sumatra and Banda Aceh, and also in Sendai in Japan. And when there was an earthquake preceded by or succeeded by a tsunami after that way. So you saw how much water came in, you know, especially in Japan, but also into the Aceh and Indonesian areas and so on, and how many people it swept out to sea. They estimate something maybe close to 400,000 people in the areas of Indonesia and Sri Lanka and India and Malaysia and so on. And these tsunamis, which are harbor waves, in this case went up around about maybe 20 meters high. But in the time of Atlantis, with the super volcano of, let's say, Krakatoa in this case, it went up a little closer to 2,000 meters high.
Meters. I thought it was feet. Meters. Wow.
Yeah, so we're talking like about a mile high.
Yeah.
And so when you have that kind of wave coming at you, you can imagine just with, let's say, the 20-meter one coming in, let's say even to Sendai, Japan, how far in that water went in land, and especially in Indonesia, where it's really a shallow area. I mean, the sea there is only 130 to 150 meters. So to put this in perspective, if you're out in a vessel, it's all relative in a sense that when you're looking out, it looks like Atlantis sunk. But what happened is that sea levels rose. Now, they rose a couple of times. One was the initial tsunami coming in, and that wiped out approximately 20 million people in a day and a night, which, by the way, is probably the largest amount of people ever, you know, perished in the shortest amount of time and the highest percentage based on the planet, the population on the planet of the Earth. So that's why it's also known as, in some types of religions or like All Souls Day or All Saints Day. And that's why, well, there's a couple other symbolic things behind that too I'm going to talk about. But it's, again, it wasn't that Atlantis sunk. It's that the sea levels rose and from that initial time. And so it's an optical illusion. And it looks like from a vessel that the island was sinking, where it was really the sea levels rising. Now, what happened afterwards is they receded after the initial tsunami. And so the water went back down into the sea. But because of the Krakatoa volcano, and we found out also that that the Toba volcano probably triggered on like the Pleistocene Ice Age, or they can trigger one on a volcano because of all the fly ash going up into the atmosphere and the stratosphere, that it ended up blacking out some of the sunlight and that sort of thing, and started to
Ice Age.
Have a positive feedback effect and cooling the Earth and so on. But what we also found out is that the fly ash, at least for the Krakatoa volcano, came down eventually on the glaciers, because even in North America, even where you're at too, as well as myself, there used to be a mile-high sheet of ice on our continent, even on Europe and so on, but all around here. So this is where, like, on this particular continent, wasn't a really good place to raise a population of 20 million people in the middle of the Pleistocene Ice Age. And it really needed to be in Atlantis, Indonesia. But anyhow, all that water started melting off because of the gray and black fly ash, or the soot that came down on the glaciers. And there's a scientific term called the albedo effect, and that's the amount of reflection you have the sun back out into space versus the amount of absorption. And so what happened is it used to reflect it back because all the glaciers and the shine of the white reflecting back, just like we paint a lot of our shuttlecraft and our rocket ships white, so they reflect heat back out. They don't absorb it. If they did it in black, it would be more absorbing. So it's the same idea. And this is not just us saying this. It's also there's a report in NASA saying that this actually does happen, and that the glaciers, you know, the soot coming down like that can actually melt these glaciers. So we also have a confirmation from them that this does happen, in case people don't really believe it. All the water ended up, or a lot of it, came off the continents, and so it had a place to go. It went back down into the oceans. So it ended up raising the ocean levels, not just in the shallow area of Atlantis, Indonesia, but also all around the world. So that's like your universal flood, where the initial tsunami was the great deluge, or the deluge, and then you have the deluge and then the universal flood, because sea levels rose in other parts of the world too, around North America here and in Europe and Asia and so on, and also in South America. So this is what ended up happening, but it ended up taking place over a period of about 1,000 years for the universal flood to take place. And that's why today, even though it receded from the initial tsunami covering the continent, this is why you just see today the vestiges or the tip tops of the continent today, which comprises, let's say, Sumatra and Java and Borneo and Sulawesi and even Lombok and Bali and so on. And so that's why you have these, the initial deluge and also the later on, over time, over a period of 1,000 years, the universal flood that took place. And these are the ones that are mentioned in a lot of these sacred texts and ancient texts and so on that are found all around the world.
And to me, Frank, the sinking part really never made sense. It's more the sea levels rising. I don't know if you're familiar with the Yonaguni Island. Are you familiar with the Yonaguni underwater structures in Japan?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that. And also Professor Santos was familiar with that. That's Dr. Kimura's work that is being done over there.
Well, fascinating. And there are some researchers also saying that that was a natural occurrence, that is not a pyramid or you know, a non-natural structures, that they were just part of it because of the erosion, which I don't buy that either. But you mentioned something that strikes me, Lemurian Atlantis. I always thought Lemuria and Atlantis were two different continents.
Well, yeah, let me straighten that out just a little bit, and this might help.
Okay.
In a sense, there was really like three Atlantises. Originally, for sure, Lemurian Atlantis was the motherland of civilization, or Mu. And then there was also the sun, which is Atlantis proper. But there's also another one, and the reason there's these different Atlantis is it really had to do with the volcanoes going off, in this case the Toba volcano, and the rebuilding. And the fatherland of civilization, or the third Atlantis, or you could even think of it as the second Atlantis, depending on how you look at it, is India, and especially in and around this Indus Valley civilization. So it just depends how you look at it. You could actually think as maybe Lemurian Atlantis being the first Atlantis, And then maybe like the fatherland of India, maybe like being the second Atlantis, at least temporary. And then the third Atlantis being the wondrous son or the offspring that way. Or, you know, you can also think of it that really it's just, you know, the Lemurian Atlantis is the first one. And then the wondrous son is the second one. And in a sense, the third one was the just a temporary one up in India. But either way, Lemurian Atlantis was the mother of civilization or Mu. The fatherland was India, and the wondrous son was the a rebuilding of Atlantis to the its advanced stage is what it is before the Krakatoa volcano really devastated and destroyed the whole area.
Well, we have empires throughout, you know, history. Could Bimini and other parts in the Atlantic Ocean suspected to be Atlantis? Many people talk about that area of Cuba being Atlantis, and they could have been outposts of Atlantis, just like the British Empire had outposts, just like the United States has military bases all over the world. If we found artifacts in the Caribbean, say, you know, tanks and airplanes, couldn't the same apply with the Atlanteans?
Well, yeah, sure it can, and did. They were a worldwide empire, and mainly they did a lot of trading. Now, I got several answers to your question with all that. Yes, at best, places like maybe Bimini could be an outpost at best, but not the true original location of Atlantis. This is one of the things I'm trying to straighten out, is to get understanding to people about the misinformation that was out there. And a lot of it may have been because the initiates and the former inhabitants of Atlantis wanted to keep this secret. Some of those people, too, also ended up being the Phoenicians, like in Lebanon.
Right.
And the reason is because they didn't want this area to be pillaged and plundered or desecrated because of their ancient ancestors being there. But it's also with the gold and the silver and the different minerals. And that's another answer to your question is that this area of Atlantis, Indonesia, has all these different types of things that Plato mentions in his dialogues of Critias and Timaeus. And on our website, there is a checklist that has a list of all these different types of criteria that Atlantis was famous for. And so, as I mentioned, like one of them's elephants, another one's a tropical climate, one's the coconuts and the pineapples and so on. But this whole area is the true location rather than in some type of outpost or remnant or colony, as you mentioned, like maybe Bimini could be, or maybe some places in the Caribbean and the Mediterranean and so on. I want to let you know, and your listeners know, that the inhabitants, the remainder of the inhabitants that could get out of the area or flee the area, ended up going northward and also westward is one direction, north and west. And that's why they went over to into India, first of all, to rebuild. Also, after the destruction of Atlantis proper, the wondrous sun, they went back that way as well, but also went further westward. And that's why they ended up going into places like Iran, which is like Persia, and then also into Iraq and, you know, like we call Mesopotamia, Samaria, all that area. But again, this is not the original source of civilization. It was Atlantis, Indonesia. They also went into Egypt and so on. And so they brought some of their technology and whatnot with them, including the building of pyramids, which, by the way, the pyramids signify their holy mountain of paradise, which is the Krakatoa volcano, and to some extent the Toba volcano, but mainly the Krakatoa, which was called Meru or Kumaru. Kumaru for Krakatoa, and Sumatra, made up in Sumatra, northern Sumatra, Toba, is Sumaru. So Sumaru, but all from Meru. And this is their holy mountain of paradise. So that's why you see pyramids all over the world. And, you know, like in Egypt and in South America and Central America and in China. And I'll have to talk about the ones that we just recently found also in Indonesia as well. But that's one way they dispersed after the great diaspora. And then the other way, because there are seafaring people, they're known as the sea people, they went in, they also navigated or circumnavigated because of the currents and everything, also into Ecuador and Peru in that area, and also up into Guatemala and southern Mexico and so on. They had to go to a lower latitudes because, again, the Pleistocene Ice Age was still melting after the Krakatoa volcano. So it's not like they came directly over to, let's say, Seattle or something like that. And so they had to go to these lower latitudes because really in order to have a and this is another answer to your question, too. The reason that they're not in other places, as other people have kind of postulated or theorized and so on, is because in order to support a population of over 20 million people, you need it to be, you cannot be anywhere above 30 degrees north latitude or anywhere below 30 degrees south latitude. So these places are not, places that would be, that had the right climate to support such a population. And being on the equator at 0 degrees was a really ideal place, especially since they had the right precipitation, the climate, and as I mentioned, also the volcanically rich soil. But we found out, too, it wasn't just located at 0 degrees latitude. What's really even more striking is that we found out that it was also located at the zero meridian, or longitude was at zero. Today in Greenwich, England, is where you have Greenwich Mean Time, and that's where the zero meridian is, because England used to have the most powerful navy in the world and very much an imperial type power. They wanted their day to begin. It would have been in England, but the observatories is Greenwich Observatory, and that's why it's something like, I don't know, maybe 12, 15 kilometers or so east of London. And so that's where the observatory is. That's where Greenwich Mean Time is, or Universal Coordinated Time, or the day starts. That's where it is today. But what we also found out before that was in Paris, France. So it's not always been in Greenwich, England. And then before that, we found out it was in the Canary Islands, because that's where a lot of people thought Atlantis was, in the Canary Islands. And before that,
another caldera there too.
Yeah. I mean, these are the things that are going on, and people thought it was that and so on, and which it never was, but we traced it back, and it ends up being over, the area of Sumatra, and intersects with the 0 degrees latitude. So we found out that, Atlantis is located at 0 degrees latitude and 0 degrees longitude, but they changed their meridian. The latitude doesn't change or won't change, but this is adds more to the confusion by changing that over to England and so on. And so this is also depicted or noted too by the Atlantean cross, the Atlantis cross, and that cross notes that, but also notes the concentric circles that was famous for the capital city of Atlantis, where all the big ships went into port, because again, they're a world trading partner with Atlantis, a lot of different places around the world. And so again, they had a worldwide empire, and they knew how to navigate the seas. That's how they got out of there to some degree. But you know, I mean, look at the population of the world. I mean, the vast population was really extinguished. There was only so many inhabitants that got out. And I think some of that's the reason why you see pyramids maybe in a little bit different shape form, because maybe they didn't make them all exactly the same. That the engineers and the scientists, you know, that got out from some areas, you know, kind of had to disperse some of their knowledge and from this area to that area. But basically very similar, very same. Maybe not exactly, but very close. And then also improvements went along the way. And these pyramids too, like Mount Meru or the Krakatoa volcano, were symbolic as like a mountain, like a stairways to heaven. And so that's why you like have the step pyramids and things too, whether it be in Mexico or let's say in Egypt and so on. And so this all is very highly symbolic, and them taking a piece of their homeland with them as well.
Why did they offer devotion, say, to Krakatoa, when he was also a planet killer?
Well, I think, you know, it was really this right out in front of them. I think that maybe in some ways that, you know, these mountains had volcanically rich soil. So it was a good thing for them in some ways, you know. It was also, again, and here's another part where this goes with it. These volcanoes, when they go off, they really look like a atom bomb going off, but they also look like a pillar going right up to the clouds or to heaven. Now, this also is another fill-in for your question of why Atlantis is in Indonesia versus other places. A lot of people think that it's got to be in and around where the pillars of Hercules is, and that's like between Spain and Morocco.
Gibraltar.
And Gibraltar Strait.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they look at that. Now, Plato mentioned that it was outside the Straits of Gibraltar, but he didn't say how far. And or the Pillars of Hercules, not even mentioning necessarily Gibraltar, I don't think, but really just outside. He didn't say that whether it was to the right or the left, or it was north or south of Gibraltar, but just outside, you know, or the Pillars of Hercules. In actuality, the Pillars of Hercules, as in Gibraltar, are really just a decoy or an archetype. The true original Pillars of Hercules, or the Pillars of Atlas, were actually in Atlantis, Indonesia. Now, the original ones were that where the great ships came into port to the capital city of Atlantis, which is the name, or the other name of the capital city was also called Poseidonis, for the founder of Atlantis, Poseidon.
Poseidon as the Greek god?
Yeah, I mean, he was known as the founder of Atlantis. And so they named the capital city also Poseidonis, was the other name other than Atlantis itself. But the continent was known as Atlantis, and also the capital city was known as Atlantis. So it's a lost city and continent of Atlantis. So anyhow, between Bali and Lombok, there is a Lombok Strait, and was leading to the capital city of Atlantis. But most importantly, that on the island of Bali, which is like really paradise lost, and very pristine even today, by the way, is a mountain called the Mount Agun. And on the island of Lombok is another mountain called Mount Rinjani. These two particular mountains are around about 3,000 plus meters high. So they're pretty good size. But most importantly, they were the original real gateway to the capital city of Atlantis, where all the great ships came into port and went through between what is now called the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. That was the passageway to get in. And also, that's where all the canals were, the hydraulic canals and everything were located, so they can control all the water flow and the ships going into port and unloading their goods and loading the goods back and all the trading that was going on. So this is where they had all the canals. But when you came into port, you had these great pillars, especially if they were going off at any time. And it was just this majestic type of you know, pillars going up to heaven as you came into port. Do you follow me?
Oh, I do. I do. And I keep thinking as you're speaking how throughout time there have been some what I call all of a suddens. You know, we had the pyramids in the Egypt, in Mesoamerica, happening more or less at the same time. Agriculture, irrigation, all that stuff happening at the same time. And it makes you wonder if it was because there was obviously an exodus after this cataclysm, and all the remnants, you know, went to all these parts of the world and provided the knowledge. And that's why we saw the rise of, you know, Sumer and Egypt, Mesopotamia, and the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas, etc. Do you see a correlation there?
There's extremely high correlation there. And this is exactly it. that there was this dispersion of information and technology and everything else. For instance, Angkor Thom and Angkor Wat and those places in Cambodia.
Incredible.
And
yeah, I know.
Machu Picchu. Okay, this is all advanced hydraulic engineering type of feats. You know, even technology, let's say, in Egypt and things as far as building the pyramids there, and all these type of, you know, temples and things, a lot of that is Atlantean type of technology. The structures also in England, that are there, the, trying to think of the name of the different, I can't think of it right now. The pillars they have, you know, the temple formation that's over in England.
Yeah, I wonder why we are forgetting, you and I both. Stonehenge.
Stonehenge, yeah, I can call it there. Stonehenge is also another example of Atlantean technology as well. So these some of these type of technologies like that, Professor Santos mentioned as being like medicine wheels in some cases. So they could also track the precession of the equinoxes and so on with some of this. So they had a great knowledge of the skies, and as well as great knowledge of the land and the oceans and everything here on Earth. So they were very much adept about this, you know, physics and geometry and sacred geometry and alchemy and all these type of things. As a matter of fact, he also found out, too, that their brains were something like 30% larger than ours are today.
Really? Is there a correlation between that and the elongated skulls that we see in South America?
Yeah, I knew you were going to kind of ask about that. That may be, but it also may be because of their wrapping the heads or elongating them, you know, not necessarily being born that way.
Well, those are the ones that we may see down there because they wanted to replicate what they saw and what they considered to be gods.
Yeah, that could be. Well, here's the thing with the rest of that is that when the Atlanteans had their diaspora and went down to let's say, South America, you have the famous people like Kukulcan and Quetzalcoatl and so on.
Yeah.
Like the feathered serpent. These are some of the Atlantean type people, or else the sons, the daughters, the grandsons, or so on, or granddaughters of the Atlanteans, and they imparted knowledge to, let's say, the Aztecs or the Mayans and the Incas and so on, and let's say for the let's say Machu Picchu, the Machu Picchu area is like, you know. That was really a tremendous amount of hydraulic engineering to prevent erosion and control water flow. So that's a signature of Atlantean technology right there. And they also, of course, made it with the indigenous populations that were there as well. So that's what, you know, you have Aztecs. And by the way, the name for Atlantis in Aztec is like Aztlan, Aztlan.
Oh,
there's an
okay.
accent on that. And the one for Mayan is Tolyan. It's T-O-L-L-A, and there's an accent on there, and so on. So there's a different names for Atlantis, not just Atlantis, which is a Greek name, which ends in like I-S. And there's a whole thing I probably should talk to you about next hour on the decipherment of that.
Well, hold for a second. I don't mean to interrupt you. I hear a lot of Mexicans talking about a portion of the United States being Aztlan. So did they think that Aztlan was part of Atlantis?
Well, as far as Aztlan goes, and I don't know about referring to the United States, because what you're doing is referring to another continent. We were kind of like the outer continent here. And I guess that goes into the story I should mention about Columbus and so on. But Aztlan refers to the original motherland or civilization where this feather serpent, you know, Quetzalcoatl came from, or the Atlanteans, or what I was really going to tell you was the fallen angels, the civilizing heroes. That's where they came from, rather than, let's say, maybe so much the United States. But You know, again, populations dispersed even into the U.S. here, too. So, you know, again, this all happened as the Pleistocene Ice Age was ending. So the populations ended up going northward, too, eventually, because and getting into the United States. That's where you have the Native American here. But here's what I wanted to get back to. You know, you were taught, everybody was taught in school here pretty much that, like, Christopher Columbus, you know, discovered America and so on. And that, but what they originally it started off with in school is that Christopher Columbus was looking for the East Indies. You remember that?
Yes.
And he was looking for the East Indies for the kings and queens of Europe. I mean, they kind of wanted him to, he had these maps and everything. And there's a big thing about going to find the East Indies. And by the way, not the West Indies, which is like, you know, like the Caribbean, like Bimini and so on.
Right.
And what he did is he ended up discovering the Americas because he didn't take the dialogues of Plato or Plato seriously, which is the Critias and Timaeus dialogues. So he runs into the Americas, and then at school, you know, I'm always thinking, and maybe some other people were too, whatever happened to the idea of finding the East Indies, because it kind of dead ends here in finding the Americas. And I think if you're probably in school and you ask that question, they probably tell you to sit down and shut up at that point.
That's either, right.
Either because they didn't know or they weren't supposed to tell you. One
right.
of the two.
Yep.
What we found out is that he was looking for the Atlantis or the riches of Atlantis because he had these maps that were almost like more valuable than gold or treasure or silver or whatever. Showing that this place, there was a place called Atlantis, and he was looking for that for the kings and queens of Europe. It was known as the East Indies. And by the way, even today, Indonesia is known as the Dutch East Indies. So what happened is also, in addition to that, and this is where another name sticks, is that's why we call the Native Americans here in the United
Indians.
States and even South America Indians.
Yeah.
Because he was looking for the East Indies, and originally they thought that's where they found. But we also found out, too, that it wasn't too long after that, just maybe a month or two or something, or a few months, that they found out that this was not the East Indies, and that they mislabeled the inhabitants here. But the name just stuck anyhow, and nobody went to correct it.
Let me add something to this. I don't mean to interject, Frank, but it's so fascinating what you're saying. I've never heard of somebody else discuss this, but a few years ago, I met with a university professor, and we were discussing, you know, Columbus. He simply opened the routes to Europe. I mean, from Europe to here. He didn't really discover there were people here. But anyway, she has found information indicating that Christopher Columbus was not a fisherman from Genoa, Italy. He was a Sephardic Jew from Catalonia and was in hiding and created this Italian persona so that he could get funding from King Ferdinand. And a Jew during the Inquisition would not have been able to do so. And since a lot of knowledge was kept via initiation, do you think that Columbus was privy to some information and he may have been looking for this lost world, perhaps with an ancient map given to him?
Yeah, I would say very much so. And in addition to that, there was other people that most likely discovered America way before Christopher Columbus, mm-hmm. Such as the Vikings and
That's
so
right.
on. And in addition to that, I talked to this specifically about this with Professor Santos, and he told me Professor Santos gets credit for discovering America because he made the legal deposits. Yeah, and so he didn't really look too negative upon that, because it's kind of like when we have our book and even our website, is that I had to make the legal deposits here in the United States for copyrights.
Yeah.
So it's the same idea. And these other guys, because they wanted to keep it secret, they didn't make the legal deposits, because once they start making the legal deposits, then everybody goes there for the riches of Atlantis. You know.
Do you think that's why the Vikings kept it quiet?
That's why a lot of people kept it quiet, including the Phoenicians, you know, because right. of this thing and a lot of the initiates. It wasn't just only because it was a sacred area. By the way, I wanted to mention everybody that this was Atlantis, Indonesia, is the holiest land or the most sacred area in the entire world, that area, is the original Holy Land, not the Middle East. Everybody dispersed out of that area. So, like, let's say, Egypt and let's say Israel and other places in the Middle East, even let's say Iraq or Baghdad, those are all the second or third, holiest lands. You know, they're not the first at all. And they're not this, they're not the cradle of civilization as reported often in the news and other places, in the media and so on. But the original cradle or birthplace of civilization was Atlantis, Indonesia, and the surrounding area. Other places are the second or third holiest land. They're the places that they had to disperse out to afterwards. And so it's just simply not the case. And so I know there's lots of, wars and battles and things that are going on in the Middle East and so on. But in a way, and even going way back, they're not fighting over they're fighting over the wrong things over there, because it's not the holiest land in the world. It may have got holy as time went along because of just over time, let's say a couple of 2,000-3,000 years ago or more. But the actual original Holy Land is Atlantis, Indonesia. That's the most sacred and holiest land in the entire world.
And you mentioned Machu Picchu, and a thought came up to me. I'm thinking of that massive, massive area, that it makes you wonder, why would the Incas build such a city in such high ground? And it comes to mind that perhaps they had the Atlantean influence to build as high as they possibly could because of what they suffered. They had the catastrophobia of the tsunami coming, and that's why they recommended that a city would be built so high. Is there a possibility there?
Well, that could be a good possibility, because the survivors today, I mean, at least Atlantis today, the land mass today, is the tip-tops and peaks of Atlantis. I mean, look at their... I mean, this is confirmed that there is a continent below the ocean in and around Atlantis, Indonesia today. I mean, that land mass is underneath the ocean. It's not just from us, but we've got it from a number of different sources that has nothing to do with us whatsoever. So it's not something like we made up, or we didn't make up all this tsunami stuff, you know, afterwards. We had all our stuff copyrighted on our website and there long before the Aceh earthquake happened, or tsunami, or the one in Sendai for that matter. So we filed all this with the Library of Congress a long time ago. So it's not something we made up because there's a tsunami that took place or in Aceh or in Sendai or something like that. These things do happen as far as tsunamis, and people could hardly believe it, what Professor Santos is saying, until they start seeing things before their own eyes, especially with the Bande Aceh earthquake.
And it makes you wonder too, Frank, and we have to take our one and only intermission, and you will discuss your links and book and all that, but makes you wonder, during the Sumatran tsunami, I always say this, like a broken record, that there was a tribe in that area that 2 days before, all the animals were moving up ground, but this tribe all of a sudden started climbing a mountain, and one person of the entire tribe died because it was a disabled person who could not seek assistance or help. But the entire tribe survived, and everybody else around them, with cell phones, with computers, they had no idea that this was coming and they died. So it makes you wonder if the Atlantean influence is still alive with some of the indigenous people. And before we go on the break also, I wanted to see why... This may sound arrogant, Frank, but with the technology at our disposal today, submarines that can dive miles, sonar, radar, and even satellites can film or map the oceanographic bottoms down to any depth and to any scale and detail, you name it, why hasn't there been, at least that I know of, any attempt to search around all these Indonesian islands in search for Atlantis? But we'll take your answer when we come back. Tell us how to purchase your book, learn more about Professor Santos' work.
Okay. First of all, our website is at www.atlan.org. In other words, it's the first five letters of Atlantis, and it's a .org or .org website. Our book can be purchased through a lot of bookstores, but especially on Amazon.com or through our website, as I just mentioned. It is being print it now and distribute it through North Atlantic Books and also Random House. Ourselves, we are the publisher, Atlantis Publications. So check out our website. There's a whole lot of, by the way, free articles up on our website as well. And we'll also discuss more about the book links, as you mentioned, when we come back after the top of the hour here.
Certainly. And folks, I have to tell you, I have the book right here. And I'm so glad that Professor Santos kept you here. You have the torch lit and continuing his work. Because, folks, this is one of those books that when you read it, more doors open that you had no idea. You keep hearing about Plato. You keep hearing about other researchers telling you that this is all in Bimini. But when you realize that we really don't have that many volcanoes here, you have to look at the area where the Ring of Fire exists. But when we come back, I'm here with Frank Joseph Hoff. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Veritas. Don't go anywhere. Thank you very much for listening to the first segment of this interview. We will continue with segment two with our special guest in the Veritas member section. Just go to our website, veritasradio.com, and click on the subscribe link to listen to the rest. We'll take a short intermission, listen to some music, and we'll be right back with segment two in the member section. Enjoy.
This is Michael Cremo, and you are listening to Veritas Radio.